If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late-night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right, Rod and I are back with We Want Winners, a day after the 49ers in yet another disappointing, yet, I don't know, I kind of felt like they were going to turn the ball over there in the last drive, loss to the Dolphins. And you know what I realized?
Yeah, what's that?
If I am Kyle Shanahan, I'm probably in my mind is, I lost two games to Sean McVay. I lost one game to LaFleur, and I lost one game to McDaniel. Like, oh, those are his, those are his underlings. Those are his Padawans, and he lost all of the games to those guys.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that would have to suck. You know?
Yeah, like, because you know how competitive he is with all of those guys. And, you know, I'm sure in some instances, them kind of being out of his shadow has put a spotlight on them, and they've been able to excel. And in some case, you know, I know not a lot of people are hot on McDaniel this year, but still, like, they're kind of like they're showing, you know, Big Brother that they're here, and he's going to have to up his game to reach them next year. I mean, Green Bay just whooped on the Saints tonight.
Yeah.
And the Rams are back in the thick of things, looking like they're going to win the division. So not that I'm saying, you know, anything hateful about them. Good on them. Mm-hmm. I think this is a little bit of a story in Kyle's comeback next year. Is this cannot happen again.
Yeah. Is it okay that it was just like at a certain point at halftime? I was like, whatever. You know, that feeling of foreboding that I sometimes get. I didn't feel good about the second half at all. And again, I'm not saying this, you know, I'm on record on Facebook saying this. I just didn't feel good about it. Even though, actually, what I'm going to start doing now is I like rewatched the game today. I was watching the game at my brother's house, and it was like, you know, we had company and stuff. And so I wasn't able to watch the game the way I normally do. And then, you know, with all the misadventures, we postponed, and now we're doing the show, you know, a day later. But it allowed me in dialysis today to rewatch the game, mm-hmm. the condensed version. And that's the best way for me to watch the game, because it lacks any kind of, you know, obviously it lacks the announcers, but it's not like a TV show. It's like each individual play. And
yeah,
when I watch each individual play, you're able to, I kind of am able to stop and watch each individual player. And it's just like a standalone piece. And it stops you from saying things like you hear online, where people are making these broad generalizations. Like, there's one guy, perfect case in point, is what do you expect when Brock is throwing passes to Saubert and Taylor? Well, that was like 6 targets out of 40. I mean, so let's not pretend. And Debo and Jennings got 9. So, I mean, each. So, I mean, it's not like, and then Kittle had like 7. So it's, so let's not pretend like he was, you know, throwing to Cowing and, you know, just had a bunch of scrubs out there that he was throwing. The majority of his targets went to good players. So that's not the reason. He had some misses.
Yeah.
He had some, you know, it was an uneven performance, but I also push back on those who say that Kyle was putting him in bad situations in order to tank his value, which is nonsense. If you look at those plays, each individual play, I mean, he had four. First of all, if you're going to tank a quarterback's value, giving him 40 attempts is probably not the way to do it. I'm just saying, you could just ask Jimmy G if Kyle knows how to tank a quarterback's performance. He'd give you gave that dude eight attempts. So he knows how to do that. But maybe I have a blind spot because I don't really be seeing all these horrible play calls that people see.
I mean, I thought it was one of Kyle's best games of the season.
The plays, and for as little as I know, the sequencing makes sense. They all look like they had, you know, when everybody does their job, they have a good chance of working. Now, those defensive players get paid too, so sometimes they tip the ball. Something like there was that one that where Kittle was open in the end zone. The first looked like a miss from Brock, but actually it was tipped.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the play call was great. Brock made the throw that probably would have been okay, but then the dude throws his hand up, and I don't think it's not for nothing that Brock is like he's like among the leaders in tip passes this season. Daniel Brunskill or Daniel, they both the same. Jake Brindle, all of them, same guy. Again, I'm on record as saying we need to beef up the middle and have big dudes in there that are like a fortress of solitude for Brock, where he has a Clint. You never saw like Brock. I mean, my man Drew Brees, who was the same size, getting his passes to because the Saint, you know, Sean Payton made sure of that, you know, mm-hmm. by protecting him and making sure that he didn't get pressure in his face. And I think, you know, our run game kind of precludes that because our guards and center have to have a certain level of mobility. So you can't just put three fire plugs in there and, you know, sell out on protecting Brock if we're going to, you know, because I guess if you did that, you're conceding that you're kind of going more the way of McVay and throwing the ball. But even they run the ball. I mean, So it's not like that. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. Let's just stay on this game because I don't want to go into the future yet.
The reason why I thought it was one of Kyle's better games is because they could not run the ball at all. Mm-mm. Like I thought, you know, and you and I had a fantasy matchup this week. And it was we were in the semifinals going up against each other. And I thought, you know, a 49ers running back in fantasy has value. Patrick Taylor Jr., I picked him up a couple of weeks ago just on the mere idea that Garendo gets hurt. Of course, then Garendo mm-hmm. gets hurt. And I was just like, after I watched the first quarter, I was like, okay, Patrick Taylor can't do anything. Like there's no room for him to run. It's not very fast. Maybe he's going to be something in the passing game. But then I see him miss all these blocks when he's pass blocking. And I'm like, oh, man, Shanahan's not going to be down with this. But they couldn't run the ball. And Shanahan had to be maybe the most creative he's been all season long in the pass game, which is adding some more screens. You saw a screen to Kittle that I was like, why don't we just run this play every game? Like it looked like the best play of the entire year. And how come we're just not spamming this play? He had to get Debo the ball in certain spaces.
And he busted a couple of them. I mean,
Debo was Debo yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was the, you know, I think the first game of the season or something, Debo had like some crazy Debo runs, or it was very early in the season. And we haven't seen that of late. And we got to see one. And, you know, our guy, Pretty Ricky, took one away because he can't he's having trouble lining up correctly on plays, which is seems very fundamental. And I know that we've been giving Pretty Ricky a lot of slack this year just because he's had a not just a tough year on the football field, but just in his life. Those are ones where I can go, okay, we don't really have to give him the benefit of the doubt. Those are just errors that cannot because happen.
That's football at Pee Wee, high school, college, and pro. Lining up is like, you know, at the professional level, it's just there's no excuse for not, and especially at what, yeah, we got this weird thing going on with lining and being in line with the center with the tackles and stuff. That is kind of weird, but you've always been able to, receivers have always been able to ask, you know, over the line judge and ask, am I good? And they'll tell you. So if you're not good, it's because number one, it's a lack in your fundamentals. And two, that you're just not, even if you feel you're close, you know, you can ask. So That's just, it's like, I say all that as a roundabout say to co-sign what you said, that there's no excuse for that.
Yeah. So, you know, they were just shooting themselves in the foot all game long. The Dolphins are not world beaters either. They are very flawed, but the one thing that they do have is they have a lot of speed on offense, and
they are explosive.
You know,
goodness,
it's got to be crazy though for someone like McDaniel. He is so worried about Tua getting hit that everything is out of his hands in seconds. So they don't really allow for any plays to develop downfield. And you have someone like Tyreek Hill, who's one of the best receivers at that. And you kind of take that game away from him. So he becomes a little bit more one-dimensional. You got to throw short passes to him. So I was just thinking, like, you know, the teams who play the Dolphins, why aren't they just trying to take away? I'm sure they're trying. It's probably easier said than done. But I was just thinking, like, why aren't the Niners just bringing guys up to the line and forcing Tua to try to go downfield and have him hold on to the ball a little bit more? But the way that they run that offense is very impressive just because of the mere fact that the elephant in the room is their quarterback cannot get hit, because if he gets hit, they're worried about him being hurt. And so everything is, you know, balls just out very early in every single play. And I don't know why I figured that the Niners are going to do something different to take away some of those screens and to take away some of those throws into the backfield. But Miami wasn't great either, but I just assumed that they were going to make some changes defensively to force some things that just didn't happen.
You know, I don't know. He just didn't look. I mean, because I watched him in high school and college, and that dude is super accurate. That's the thing is, but like you say, it all seems so rushed now. It seems like literally I used to talk about Jimmy and playing hot potato, but that's really what it looks like with Tua, is that they are really just, you know, they don't want to risk it at all. And I just don't know how sustainable it is. And look, I know I've heard all the stories. The coaches like McDaniel and not so much LaFleur, but Houston, D'Amico. Mm-hmm. I like follow those teams, and everybody seems to love Tua. So nobody there really is, apparently in the whole building, is there for any Tua slander. even though, like you say, there's this huge elephant in the room that you know, apparently he was a hard worker, nice guy. So the team rallies around him and are very protective of him. But I just don't know how, I mean, well, obviously they paid him, so there's that, but it just doesn't seem like it's sustainable.
Yeah. I imagine, the games that they don't play well, they probably it's against teams whose defensive backfields are a little bit more physical.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Lenore played very well, having to run around with Hill all game long. I thought he played pretty well. You know, Jimmy Ward gave up the touchdown, and Tony Romo kind of explained the problem, which was Charvarius Ward. I was thinking of Jimmy Ward because I think Jimmy Ward got hurt in the Texas, mm-hmm. the Texans and the Chiefs game. But Mooney Ward, he had help on the inside. So Romo was explaining right. that little short touchdown pass that his whole goal was to not let the receiver get towards the sideline. And that's exactly what he did. So, you know, there's just errors like that. Where, you know, the Niners of, you know, last year and the year before would have probably cleaned that stuff up. But just this year,
attention to detail. Yep.
This year, you're 6-9 and you're playing guys who you're not normally used to playing with and that offensive line. And I think they even said today, Jalen Moore
and Banks
and Trent, they're all out for the rest of the mm-hmm. season. So that's a patchwork offensive line. You know, they're going to have to make a decision, and I don't think they'll do this against the Lions unless the game gets out of hand. But I don't know, man. I mean, might want to see what Josh Dobbs can do with that offensive line more so than Brock.
Because I don't know, man. But see, the thing with me is this is what you get when you want to be fire and brimstone on my man quitting. Now you can't quit. You cannot take now. if quitting is unforgivable, don't try to play some mags with me. Tanking is quitting.
What'd you think about the way that they handled that?
I thought obviously they did what they did, and that's fine. But what I am hearing through the back channels is what exactly what I thought it was, is that Devondre Campbell is a different dude. He is, you know, I'm not going to say what I said in my group chat, but he is a thinker.
Yeah.
He's not your normal football player. And I knew if with what happened, it with the just the combination of the coaches and stuff, they came at him wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's certain ways, because I, as someone who has walked off of jobs before, mm-hmm. as someone who, I'm not proud of it, but at 21 years old, I beat my supervisor's ass in the middle of the casino floor and walked off the job. So somebody who understands, if you talk to me wrong,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to go good. And I'm sure that's how it went. Them dudes came at him and was trying to bully him into going, and he a grown-ass man, you know, and he just decided to leave work. So should he have done it? No. It is unprofessional. Yes. But it wasn't him being unprofessional alone or in a vacuum. So there's that. But then, if he was trash anyway, why did they care about him going in the game, and why be so vindictive? That's what it seemed like to me. But if he's trash, just release him. Nobody's going to sign him because you just said he was trash, right? So it just didn't make any sense to me.
I mean, it sounds like they're just now they're upset. So they're just going to mess with his money in the right. best way that they can mess with his money. You know, I think one of the reasons why I have so much respect for football players is because of the amount of stuff that their body goes through just on a daily basis, just in order to practice, how prepared they have to be in their body and how trustful they have to be in what they're doing. And the injuries and all those things that pile up, the head injuries are the ones that scare me the most. But, you know, we've talked about this for a while. You know, this is why running backs are like 3 years and done, because it's not just the getting beat up, it's they just lose a half a step and they're not as valuable anymore. And someone like him, who's played in the league for so long and understands kind of how teams want to maybe protect other players who they value more, mm-hmm. it seemed that from jumpstart, that the 49ers saw him as a useful backup. And if they had to start him, they were starting him not because he was a starting player, but because of other things had to happen. And they almost begrudgingly put him into action in some situations. Like I forgot what podcast I was listening to, but it sounds like there was some stuff going on throughout the entire season where he thought he was going to get some opportunities that all of a sudden that they would pull from him and give to younger players. But that is part of the game that we're talking about, because if you have a veteran who's got tread on his tires and you have a young player who's going to make less money, then you kind of want to throw in the young player because that's the player that you're trying to build for anyway. So there's this balance with vets and young players. And I'm sure he thought in certain situations that I'm just better than this player who they keep playing over me for that reason. But then there was something with Dre and Dre skipping over him, which I can't imagine that he was surprised by any of that. Dre for the whole year.
But the thing of it is he absolutely should not have been surprised, because part and parcel, which you were just saying, none of that is inappropriate. But as a person who has managed teams, it is my responsibility as a leader. He should never find out on a goddamn place, excuse my language, roster that he's not starting. Lynch and Kyle, at every step of the way, anytime they make, again, I understand what line level employees think. Well, he is an employee and he's got to do what they have to. And poor organizations might run like that. But good leadership, it is synonymous. I'm going to use an example. It's not exactly on point, but it is. It was my policy that nobody ever got was never sideswiped in an end of year evaluation. Anything that I put in there, we had talked about on several occasions. So there was never any surprises. So if D Winters was getting his reps, somebody should have went over there and told him that that's what the plan was. If they were sure Dre was going to be the starter when he got back, somebody should have had that conversation. It shouldn't have been something that's bullshit that it's supposed to be just understood.
So
the way it is.
So do you think they were unsure about Dre heading into kickoff?
And I don't, but if that was anyway in the plan, that conversation should have been had on Tuesday. That look, we're activating him, and if he's a go, he's the one. That simple. That's all that had to be said. If that wasn't said, that is a lack of leadership. And I believe he had every right to be pissed, especially if all along the line this season that type of bullshit had been happening, that he's preparing to start and then all of a sudden Winters is getting his reps, or Beal is getting his reps without, again, does a boss, but see, that's, to me, that's the difference between bosses and leaders. Does the boss have to tell you anything? No, but a leader goddamn sure does that. Mm-hmm. And that is what I have always carried myself as. It's because all of these shits are relationship businesses, and you have to, and that's one of the things from the outside looking in, as good as they've been, I don't know how great this management team. I know Parag sucks at it. He's goddamn rain man. But you have to be able to manage these relationships. Again, and it's, I get the fans don't understand it, but like with the whole BA thing, everybody was talking about, well, you just make him play. But man, that's not how the league works. He's got an agent that you're going to have to deal with long after him. These are relationships that you are, and PA's agent is Lynch's agent. So again, these are relationships that aren't just numbers. And so when you say that I'm just going to F this guy over, you're not F-ing him over in a vacuum. Agents talk, you're fucking this guy over, and agents talk and other organizations, kind of like recruiting in college, it happens in the NFL that those type of situations come back to haunt you in contract negotiations with somebody else or with free agents with somebody else. Well, he screwed this guy. This is how they did him. And then, like, you look as we move forward with Brock, how in the hell after his start do you lowball? I mean, it just, I couldn't imagine, but maybe they just don't value relationships. And it is just that. And they feel like they could treat him just like they can treat Colton McKivitz, I guess. I don't know. That's a shit way to run a business, though. I don't, you know.
If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So do you think, and you know, I would love to, I know the Niners side of things is out there. Lots of their leaders on the field, like George Kittle and Mooney Ward, have been really negative on Campbell. But I do hope he gets an opportunity to say something. The thing that's kind of surprises me is if the Niners wanted to, they could have said something to the effect of, yeah, he was hurt, that's why he didn't go in the game. But they didn't. They said he quit. So that was very clear that they were okay to sever that relationship and just kind of wash their hands with him. And you know, to be honest about it, in some instances, you know, you've heard stories where players, you know, didn't do the right thing and the teams cover up for them. So that is something that the 49ers didn't do. I would hesitate to believe, though, that this is just their modus operandi. I can't imagine they've been as successful as they have been with just treating certain players, you know, like this. So I hope this is just kind of like a, you know,
I don't know, man. We can just talk about the fact that in every contract negotiation, how come it always is acrimonious? And then again, would they get credit for getting it done? But why does it have to always be the low ball? And then this is it, final answer. And then you fucking cave. I mean, I don't know. That's dumb to me. Because nobody believes it at this point. And then we could go back to earlier this season. You know, the way they treated Eric Armstead was Bush League to me. It didn't make any sense. The fuck you? How do you offer him $6 million? Mm-hmm. That's just crazy. Again, I get it. You don't think with the injury risk and whatnot, he's worth it. You are better off just saying we are going in a different direction. We want to allow you to go. Why in the hell would you, if you don't want him here, why insult him? Because that is insulting. People, you know, I'm tough enough, blah, 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 blah. He had the right to be disrespected after the way he played, number one, when he was healthy. Number two, you shit on him about the fact that he's always hurt, but he's hurt in service of you. That's like your wife, man. That's like your wife saying, you don't ever spend any time with me, but she's enjoying the lifestyle you being gone is providing. It can't be both things. You cannot criticize him for being hurt. But then, you know, he's hurt because he's out here giving it all and playing hurt. I think that's chicken shit. I just do. And then on top of that, his work in the community is par excellence. And if you want to tell me that's not important, then why, if it's not important, then why the hell do at every time, at every opportunity, does the team use it in marketing and whatnot to show their community activities? Why was he always the center of that? If it didn't matter, we didn't talk about it, but they definitely did. So when you put all that in the ball, and then when it comes time for you to pay your contract, which everybody, all the fans say, honor your contract, honor your contract. Well, they wasn't going to honor that $18 million that they signed with, like you asked the players, B.A., why don't you go out there and play on that fifth-year option? You signed it, but nobody ever asked the player, the coach, the team to honor the contract you signed. That's business. It's not business with the players, though. This shit pisses me off. And with all of that, you wrap all that in the ball, and then with all the service that he gave you, you said, what that's worth to us this year is $6 million, which is more than half of what the market value is. He signed for 15. The deal was 18. Do you negotiate that? There was a deal there. I'm sure there was. But six is bullshit. So fuck Jed and Parag. Excuse my language.
All right. So Big Leo wanted us to talk about the O-line. I thought Brock played a pretty good game for somebody who did not have a lot of time to throw, did not have lanes open to throw, and was, you know, he's probably counting the Mississippis in his head, thinking of the time that he had to throw. So what do they do? Like, this is a team that has gone on record as to say that they don't draft offensive linemen early in the draft because they're looking for, you know, players who can do something with the football. This is not in their MO. Trent is nearing the end, though. He's still going to be a good player, I think, even as he ages. But the rest of this offensive line is in shambles. And, there was a photo that a lot of people were retweeting where there were the Miami Dolphins pass rushers were kind of creating a little bit of pocket around Brock. And there were Niners pass rushers who were like way out in front of them because they got beat. And then there was Brendel, who was like 2 yards ahead of everybody else, just turning around like, oh, man, I must have missed the block. Like, what do they do with the offensive line? We saw Jim Harbaugh. His first thing in San Diego was to draft a tackle in the first round, but that's just not the 49ers' MO under this regime.
It really isn't, and I don't know. I just think my draft philosophy, is, for what it's worth, is that you use those high draft picks on positions that are either going to cost prohibitively in free agency or on guys who's just simply never reached free agency. You know, it takes Daniel Snyder for somebody like Trent Wood. And the fact I had, he has had some health issues, I guess, if I want to give Daniel Snyder a break, which I don't, that you get an opportunity to get a Trent Williams in the middle of his career. Those guys just don't, if a guy separates himself as an elite, or even a top of the league tackle, you're just not going to get a bite at them. So I would say that position is worth it. If you want to tell me you don't draft guards before the third round, okay. I mean, before the fifth round, that's fine. Because guards are pretty plentiful. You have to be somebody like with the Colts. Their guard that they paid a whole bunch of money. He's like literally, or those guys in Philly, potential Hall of Fame type players. To not have them at least test free agency. You know, it's you know, they end up getting paid, and a lot of them don't slip through. But you can sign guards to big deals and offer sheets and get them out. Tackles, it just doesn't happen. So I don't think if there is somebody there who is worthy of the pick, again, that's the other thing that people always say, just take a tackle. How the hell do we know if any of these tackles are worth taking? So that'll be their evaluation.
It doesn't sound like this is going to be a tackle draft, by the way.
So you should not be just taking based on need. You know, you don't take a pick on the cusp of the top 10 just because you need to take that guy. Though I've always believed that those picks should be the best player available, regardless of what your needs are. You take, or if it's even, you obviously lean towards need. But if there's a glaring in the top 10, if there is just a glaring guy, just a standout guy, and you've got just a guy in that position who is serviceable and you could get by with him, but this guy could be an all pro or perennial Pro Bowl player, I always say you take the best player. And then you figure out where they're going to play or who's going to move or whatever. You just don't, you know, like it's an old example and an old reference, but Derek Smith was a solid linebacker. Mm-hmm. Not to have taken Patrick Willis because you had Derek Smith starting would have been dumb, you know, because so theoretically you did not have a need at linebacker, but this guy's talent was off the charts and Sane figured he could do something with it. So so Nolan made the pick and, you know, Hall of Fame layer, you know, that's what you do, I believe. But so if there's not a good tackle there, then I wouldn't be reaching for tackles in the first round because it's not like we don't have a bunch of other needs. Like I've seen people with mock drafts where they've got like six offensive linemen being taken, and which is obviously ridiculous when you talk about roster management and resource allocation. But there's no doubt that I could be convinced that you need everybody from Trent over. Well, I'm saying Pooney. And is Pooney a tackle? I don't know. I know he's really good at guard, but there was some talk during the pre-draft that he could kick outside. That tackles are harder to find than guard. So if he can play, I would try him out there first. That would just be me. And then because those interior guys, as important as they are, I don't argue with the fact that you can get those guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. Because you can convert tackles to guards. You can convert guards to most guard and tackle combinations. You can find some players that way. So I would not be spending, you know, second and third round picks on guards unless they are generational talents. Like I remember like when Alex Mack came out of Cal, everybody, you know, he was the darling of the scouting community, you know? So if it's a guy like that, that, you know, scouts feel like he's going to be a plug and play 10-year player at a very, very high level. Okay. I mean, I'd rather do that than take a kicker, in the third round. So, you know, that's okay. But other than that, well, I've seen enough of Jalen Moore to know that I'm not going to kick him off the team, but he's not a starter. He can be a priority replacement, but I think that ship has sailed. I wish I could have seen more of Ben Bartsch because his numbers look good and his tape looks good, but he only played in three games. I'm done with Colt McKivitz. I think Aaron Donald is just a guy. I mean, Aaron Banks is just a guy. If I'm not just kicking him out without a replacement, but I wouldn't pencil him in as a starter. And then Brindle, I don't know. I just think, you know, the best days, his best days are behind him. They want to keep him hanging around, you know, as a, you know, whatever, as a fill-in guy. That's cool. And then I think we're all good on Spencer Burford. So there are a lot of spots open, but just fundamentally, I don't disagree with their strategy of targeting skill players at the top of the draft and then striving to find linemen. And, you know, there's a risk to that, but I think it can be done. I don't know that they do it as seriously as some other teams do, because the Niners have never been a team that just bring in, like, you know, 100, you know, just bring in a bunch of unsigned free agents and then figure out what the 90s is going to be. They seem to be pretty strategic and don't like to throw a lot of money out there for high priority free agents right after the draft, which it's a game. That's a game too. There are teams that spend a lot of money on those high priority undrafted free agents. And there's risk there, obviously, because they didn't get drafted. For most of those guys didn't get drafted, not because of their talent. It's because of some, you know, some other behaviors that they're kind of coin flips, but, you know, bet on the talent. I just hope they bring in a lot of guys. And if they, again, if the draft process shakes out and there are some guys in the spaces where they're drafting that they're not afraid, just based on some kind of I just don't believe in just drafting based on, I think you should have a philosophy, because as Bill Parcells used to say, if you make a bunch of exceptions on your rules, then what you end up with is a roster full of exceptions. So you should set your categories and your criterias, and if they don't meet that, then don't do that. But I don't know, man. There are times when there are exceptions to the rule. And I hope they are willing to take a risk, because that is definitely a position group that we can't run it back. Can we? Can we run it back again? I can't. We did this season. I could not believe that John Lynch is that committed to the, I'm looking at this list of players. How could you be that committed to these guys? I don't see it.
I'm starting to think, based on what we've seen, they thought the best way to attack this season was to bring in some guys that they thought could fix some holes and run it back with a lot of the same cohesion from last year's teams, and just cross their fingers that the injuries weren't going to rear their head. And they bet wrong, and maybe that's a tougher thing to do when you just went to the Super Bowl. It's probably tougher to say, okay, we need to actually have some hard discussions with some of these guys and make some decisions. And maybe that's what they were doing with Armstead, but publicly it seemed a little callous in the way that they did it. But I'm just like, because the reason to do it that way is to go, we got Brock under one more year of this money before we have to work on an extension for him. So let's take advantage of that and let's bring in some vets, but let's try and keep are the main guys together to just give it one more shot. And it's clear that after 3 years of deep playoff runs, that was the wrong decision. But I don't know how you can make the decision, or how you can have a season outlook and say, more than likely our guys are going to get hurt because we've been running them out there for 20 games a year. And thus we're going to have to make those hard decisions. Now, I think to the fan base, that would be seen as not giving them a chance to get back to the Super Bowl. But at the same time, the NFL is so unforgiving when you make the wrong decision. And we're seeing it this year. A lot of people are comparing it to the post Super Bowl season from a few years ago. Yeah, there was lots of impending doom happening in that season too, but this impending doom seemed a little bit more predictable. But I'm not exactly sure how you strategize. You know, how you don't just try and take advantage of it and just hope for the best. I don't know how you can actually sort of predict how that was going to happen and then sell your fans on the idea that the team was still going to be a Super Bowl contender.
I thought that team was close last year. And then, you know, you figure I'm always a believer of, well, let's put it like this. I see that our fan base, at least our internet fan base, seems to think that the last, particularly the last 5 years, is just how it's supposed to be. You go to 4 NFC championships and 2 Super Bowls, and, you know, Kyle sucks because we didn't win. I think that every Super Bowl run is precious because we get spoiled to think, because we've had a lot more. I don't know if you saw that Nick Wagner post today about how over the past 21 years, we've either missed the playoffs or gone to the NFC championship.
Yeah,
when I first saw that, when I first read it, I was like, that can't be real. But then I fact checked it, and sure as shit, it is true. And so we have this belief that when you go to the playoffs, that's what you do. You go advance to the championship game. And it's completely irrational. So, but on the flip side of that, I think if you think you have a chance, I believe you throw everything at it to keep that window open as long as you can, because when it shuts, you never know. Just to think that it's just going to be reopened in the next couple of years, it could be, or we could go from 2000 to what was it when Harbaugh finally got us there? Mm-hmm. We went a long stretch without any sort of success. So I just think you strike when the iron's hot and you deal with it. So I have a little understanding of the systems the 49ers run because I try to study them, but I have no way of looking at a player and knowing. So I'm not going to be looking at Malik Collins and say, well, this is how he's going to fit into the system and this is how we're going to use him and this is why we wanted him here. All I could do is look at his individual statistics and I could go look at the tape of whether he's getting off blocks and stopping stuff. And all those dudes that they signed, Collins and Floyd and Elliott and Gross Matos, I finally know his name at the end of the season. all of those guys were replacement level players. And sure enough, they played out exactly how the rest of their careers have played out. For people to think that they were going to get signed here and all of a sudden they were going to be all pros. No, they're related. It would literally Nick and the replacement pieces this year. And that was disappointing in the context of being sold that we were trying to get to New Orleans. If that wasn't, and I'm not a moron. I know that nobody's going to come out and say, you know what? We're not doing that this year. We're trying it, but you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That doesn't really sound well in the season ticket holder meeting. If we make it back, we make it back. If not, hey, four of the last 5 years, you know, you got that, you know. But you guys got that money already. But you're trying to get this money this year. So
it says? It just shows you how Belichick's job in New England with Brady and keeping you know, keeping the top guys and making sure the other positions, you know, still had talent. You know, maybe they weren't they weren't always able to have the best defense, or they weren't always able to have the best wide receiver class, but they were able to bring in guys at times to when needed. And same with what the Chiefs are doing right now. It's hard.
And Detroit.
Well,
that is the biggest indictment of when you look at what the 49ers are. They got like 16 people on the injury list.
But the difference is with Detroit, they're like hungry. They're like the franchise has been, you know, waiting for these opportunities. So they better be ready for the moment, because this is the time for them to be ready. But basically what I'm saying is it's just really hard year over year with injuries and some turnover to keep making the right moves. And I think we can say probably with very little worry of being wrong here, that the Niners' outlook in the beginning of this season was probably not the correct one.
And
you know, I understand, like, as a fan, let's say they realized that maybe Hargrave wasn't the right fit before or at the end of last year, right? Let's say they make that decision that they may have to make on Hargrave next year. What if they made that a year early and you cut him loose and you're basically telling your fan base, oh, yeah, we still want to win a Super Bowl, but we just got rid of this guy who we brought in to help us get there. They're going to have to make, you know, they eventually are going to have to make a decision with Debo, but they made that the year before, knowing that their usage probably is running him down a bit. And the one guy that seems to be fresher than ever when he's able to stay on the field is George Kittle. He's amazing.
I thought George was on the sunset side of his career. So, boy, I freely admit I was wrong.
Every other position has suffered a little bit because of all the defensive turnover. And they tried to bring in, you know, these young defensive backs. In some cases, in certain games, it seems to be okay. But in other games, you know, sometimes it's not great. But there is someone like Lenore who has stepped up and who stepped into that, you know, number one defensive back role. So there's something there. But then, you know, for as much as Fred is able to cover, you know, he cannot play that entire area by himself. And they showed the play yesterday again where Romo was like, here's why this receiver was able to cut all the way across the field. I think it was Smith, tight end. And all Fred did was he took one half step in the wrong direction. That's all it took for Jonnu Smith to get open. And to me, I was like, oh, man, poor Fred. But I was like, where the hell is everybody else? Like, there's nobody else in the area to make the play, and but it's all on Fred.
It is so when I talk about the average play at the defensive interior spot, but Dre Greenlaw makes such a big difference. The run defense.
They had to save that poor dude from himself.
Better with him in there. And yeah, I think we've seen enough. I think we've seen that he's back. And what that does, not to get geeky, is it changes what is required of those dudes up front.
Yeah.
All you got to do at that point, we don't need you to get off blocks and make plays. All we need to do is occupy these dudes and let Fred and Dre be free to make the play. And like you say, now Fred doesn't have to make every play because Dre can make the play, and he does it with force and with attitude. And it makes him coming back made everything kind of make sense. Where I shitted on all those defensive interior signings, with him out there, it like, oh, all Malik Collins has to do is latch on to the
guy. Hold his ground, yeah.
He can do that. All those guys seem to be able to do that. And then these dudes just come in and lay the smack down. They feel, and they feel fast. And it just looked completely different. But then in every game, it seemed like Dre would kind of slow down, and then all, which is completely understandable. I'm not criticizing him at all. It's just that it was, number one, it was good to see, and willfully, with an entire offseason now and then a training camp where, I mean, where he is training and not rehabbing, we get a closer version, because as we know as Warrior fans, you know, hoping to get a 100% player back from an Achilles is probably wishful thinking. But if he can just play at the level he played at in his return next season, we're going to be fine. We'll be
okay.
Fine,
but let's talk about the business of football again, because poor guy gets hurt and was probably looking at a bit of a raise before getting hurt. Now he's back for a half of a game and then a quarter or whatever he played yesterday. And they have to save him, because if they don't, there's a possibility of him getting hurt again. But I'm sure he wants to put more stuff out there, because if he doesn't, then he's basically saying, well, I'm coming back at a discount. I'm going to have to run through this whole thing all over again and go for, you know, a contract year. So that is the thing I feel bad for him about. I mean, it's good for Niners fans in a sense, because now he's kind of stuck. We'll see.
He's unrestricted, though. He's unrestricted this year, isn't he?
I mean, there are possibilities of, you know, I guess you could look at the Texans, and, you know, that they don't seem to be.
That would be that. I'm sure that would be the first call I would make if I was D'Amico Ryans, is if, you know, it's just because it seems like, I don't know, I never knew that about Al Shaiyeh. He seems to be out of control.
Yeah, he's looking kind of crazy.
Yeah, so I don't want, number one, I want Dre here because I want to see him play, but I also want him to get paid. So I want him to be wherever he's going to make the most money, and especially coming off such a catastrophic injury, I would like to see him get some kind of security. Because how much, what has he made in his career? I just can't imagine. It's a whole lot of money.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm not gonna slow the progress down. But yeah, I think that it would be great if he, I would love him to stay here, but I want him to get paid, because he's only made like $10 million,
mm-hmm,
which is not a whole lot of money. You know, when you talk about half of that, it's taxes. So I'd like to see him at, you know, he's 28. This is going to basically be it. I mean, unless he's Bobby Wagner, this is probably going to be his last contract. Maybe he does a couple of 1-year deals or whatnot. But, you know, middle linebackers don't really have a long shelf life in the NFL. And I just want him to be set up and be comfortable, because he's given a lot to this team, into this game. And I want that for everybody, though. So, yeah.
He may have made a little bit more. It looks like he got some bonuses for their contract manipulation over the years. So he may actually,
yeah, what you call it, didn't give me, they normally on SpotTrack, they have like a career earnings. I was kind of doing the math on the fly, because it doesn't, you know, I know that the contract term is a fallacy. I can't trust that. So I think you're right. It looks like he did. He's closer to, wow, yeah, closer to $20 million.
Yeah, so so
good for him.
The game in of itself against Dolphins, we haven't really talked too much about it, but it, you know, it's just kind of what you've seen from them the entire year. Play close, have a chance, and then Brock throws a pick in the fourth, which I didn't see the pick coming. But I sure as hell saw a mistake coming, because it just felt like that that was set up. And, you know, the thing about it, Moody missing that field goal when he did changed the trajectory of the game, because when the Niners were driving at the end there, Dolphins were only winning by 2 points. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you make that kick, and that may have changed some other 2-point conversions and stuff. So let's say at worst you're tied. The way that you play that last drive, or the way that Brock plays that last drive, is probably a little different. I thought he was a little reckless on that throw. He knew where the pressure was. He knew where it was coming. He had some safety valves that were wide open, and he, you know, he went for the play that he wanted to make, but he had nothing on the ball, and it was just, there was no chance that ball was getting. Even if he doesn't get hit, I'm wondering if he still makes that throw. It just looked like out of his hand. It didn't look great. But at the same time, that kick, and Shanahan seemed more upset than usual about that. And I know the special teams have been an issue all game long, or all season long, but that kick and the way Shanahan discussed it, I kind of thought that I'm not sure if we see Jake Moody next year. That
it sounded to me, you heard the same thing I heard, and what it sounded like to me was Jimmy at the end. Mm-hmm. I think Kyle is done with that dude. And I see people online. I was talking to a dude just today on Facebook, and he was talking about, because I made a post like, so who's coming in to compete for the job with Moody? And, you know, there were so many people saying that he's safe, he'll be back. And I'm not saying he won't be back. So. But I'm not necessarily saying he won't be back, but I can't imagine that he's going to be handed the job. I can't imagine he's a starting kicker in training camp. I just can't. You know, I think at very least they bring somebody in, and they might draft somebody. Yeah. So I don't see it. We just can't. The talent, the leg talent is great, but you have to have some level of consistency. And this dude is trick or treat, and you just can't have your kicker be trick or treat. I'd rather have, you know, Matthew Wright, or, you know, like somebody like Robbie Gould, who can't reach those long distances, but that, you know, when you get him in his range, he's going to make it. You just, yeah. That's just what you have to have. And I guess you could make the case that, well, what you have to have also is you have to be able, in today's game, you have to be able to make those kicks outside of 50 yards, because it does seem like at this point that's a layup for those guys. So, I mean, he's got the leg talent. It's not a problem. But
the difference in the game, neither team could really put the ball in the end zone. Mm-mm. The difference in the game is they had confidence in their kicker to make 4 field goals
from wherever.
And Shanahan often doesn't really want to kick them. You know, he doesn't have confidence in Moody. And then, you know, on the sideline, you know, he's throwing clipboards and stuff, and it's clearly frustrating to him.
Yeah.
And you know, for the fans, mm-hmm. I will say, if Moody, and now this is probably Moody's whole, like he probably his emotions and keeping them under control. If he just looked kind of mad that he missed one, I think the fans would give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. But he's got the same face, make or miss. And, you know, I don't know if you could come back from missing an extra point in the Super Bowl anyway.
And so. Kyle's body language around Jake Moody is just horrible. It just, like you say, like the game we were at when, you know, he pulls him off the field. And it's just, and then you go back a little bit longer, and you talk about the contractor comment. Yeah. I mean, now you convinced me all signs point towards Jake Moody.
You know what? He's probably going to end up being a pretty darn good kicker in a few years. Just because you see a lot of these young guys get bounced around, and then they kind of become veteran nomads. And I would imagine that Moody kind of figures it out. Like you said, he's got the leg strength. But then again, we'll see, you know, when the kick, part of the reason to draft him was because of the kickoffs. the kickoffs might not mean as much as they once did, the way that this rule works. I don't really see anybody doing much with kickoffs. So we'll see. But all right. So we've been pretty negative, and rightfully so. But we do have to talk about a player of the game, the coach saying player of the game. There were actually more people who I think you could actually talk yourselves into than you would think based on how we feel. But let's play the sound clip here.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
I think my guess is that you're going to go with George, because this has just been a George year, and I thought George was awesome. But I thought Debo played great too, and man, it was so fun to see how he just electrifies the offense when he is playing well. Like Debo, as well as Kittle, plays because he is the tight end and because he's so much a part of the blocking stuff. He can't just go out there and run routes and do all that. Like he does have another job, but man, when they can scheme Debo open and he's just got a little bit of space, I just get so excited to watch him with the football. And so I thought he played excellent as well. And then, you know, on the other side, if you wanted to say, you know, Lenore having to play against Tyreek Hill, there were a couple where Lenore had tight coverage, but really it was Tyreek Hill dropping the ball. But
absolutely,
part of the reason was because Lenore was right there with him as well. But who is your ultimate player of the week for week?
Quickly, I'm going to do it Olympic style.
Okay,
bronze medal, Fred Warner. I thought he was awesome. Silver medal, George Kittle. I think it had a lot to do with the fact that he's like one every week.
Yeah. Wait, did we have Kittle last week too? Who'd you have for last week?
I believe it was Kittle.
Okay.
Yeah. And so our player of the game is Debo Samuel.
There we go. That's, I mean, he makes such a difference. And again, like we're like trying to envision a healthy squad. But him and McCaffrey on the same team is like having to guard, you know, multiple scorers on a basketball floor, because you can't really double anybody. You gotta be less risky with your defense when there's multiple people who can get open. And, you know, I think JJ didn't have a great game. He didn't seem to be open all that much. But with Ayuk, with Debo, with George, with Christian, all playing the way that we know how they can play, then JJ goes more into like the third and Juwan, the hands guy, the clutch guy who can use his size against a secondary defender, right? In this offense, he gets more attention from your primary defender. So that is kind of how you can envision it. But I still think it would be nice. I don't know what speed burners are out there. I just want to see one guy make the other team go, huh, they're trying to go deep. I mean, we may have to pay attention to this guy. I want to see just one. Just bring one guy in.
I love Pretty Ricky. But I'm going to say, you're talking about a guy like A.D. Mitchell and with the Colts? Oh, see, he went after Ricky. But anyway, yeah, we need a guy like that. We need a field stretcher. And what you just laid out is, you know, obviously I'm disappointed with the season. But I think it'd be a mistake to write these dudes off. I just think, I mean, that's a lot that has to happen with dudes that are around the age of 30 in terms of health. But man, if we can get, you know, Christian back to any version of himself, and BA is able to get up to, which I know is hard to do coming off of ACL, MCL, to come back to be yourself in the first year. But if you get that and you slot JJ back to where he is, because obviously he is not, and we've asked and answered the question of is he a number one receiver? Is not. So that's fine. And if George can continue, or if he can just take everybody with him to whatever the hell Fountain of Youth he's got in Tennessee, and everybody can come back whole and healthy, and then we can figure out something on the offensive line. Because there have just been so many examples of really quick rebuilds through the draft on offensive line. Kansas City did it. Cleveland did it. It can be done. You can bring these young players in and they can play right away in your system if they're smart and athletic. So if that happens, even we've seen what Kyle has been able to get done with less than ideal circumstances. If they could just hit on another couple like they did with Pooney, or if he moves outside and you can hit on another couple on the inside, and then you just have filler guys like Banks or someone else. I don't know. Feliciano kind of sounded like he had hung it up, but he didn't play poorly. I mean, he's a pro. He's not trash. He's not Spencer.
He got reps in the Super Bowl.
So they went
to war with him.
Right. So he can play. So he can fill in guys with veteran guys. But I really do hope there's a youth movement there, because I just think both on both sides of the ball, lines of scrimmage, we kind of need a youth movement there. And I know it's hard when we just outlined how this team could be good with all those skill players back. And so the trick bag would be to go ahead and just run it back again with a bunch of scratch and dent vets and just try to piece something together. But I just think it needs to be a hybrid model. We need to, kind of like they did in the secondary this year, you put, you know, Brown and Malik out there and you just let them, you know, get their licks. Renardo Green has played a lot this year. And could you have gotten, well, Gibson could have played better than those dudes. And Hufanga was definitely better than either one of those dudes, I think. Mm-hmm. But it was good to get those young guys reps because they are the future. I don't know, with the Brock thing, are we going to be able to pay Hufanga?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And especially when you've got as many young guys back there, I would want to keep him, but hell, it's not my money. And I understand there is a salary cap to a certain extent, and I wouldn't want to be nickel and diming him. He should get paid. He should get a good mid-level. And, you know, he's not a top of the market safety by any means, but he shouldn't be anywhere near a veteran minimum. He should be a solid middle class earner at the safety position, whatever that is. And if he can get that, if they can make those numbers work, since those two young guys are rookies, and they don't think that having in here stunts their growth, which is a real thing, you know, you want to straddle, as we've seen as Warrior fans, straddling that two timeline thing is, you know, it's pretty hard to do. So
they got beat again tonight at home.
Yeah, I was watching that debacle before I had to come down here and get set up. You know, all of a sudden we're like a 500 team.
Yeah, it's very close. Very close.
Yeah,
to 500
so
team.
So yeah.
All right, we're gonna get out of here, but Niners and Lions Monday night. That could get away from us. I'm a little worried. The way that team can score the football. But you know, they got to play it out. We can't throw in the towel. They got to run it out. I'm sure the guys who are continually trying to get back, like Bosa and such, you know, they're going to continue to try and make it back. Do you know that more than likely, you know, I would say not more than likely, but you know, Brock's got a good shot of throwing for 4,000 yards.
Yeah.
And you would think about like his season, and the thing that I would think if I kind of like think back about I would think, you know, he had a ho-hum season, and I think the 17 touchdown passes kind of does say that. But they still have been able to move the football through the air.
The only other thing is, like, 4,000 yards is will get him, like, 18th in the league in passing yards. It's not as – I mean, it's a big number. And in our franchise history, it's going to put him in great company. But those yards, those passing yards in today's league are – severely inflated or the cost of inflation, you know, in terms of like what 4,000 yards meant 10 years ago, as opposed to what, and I think Bo Nix is going to throw for 4,000 yards as a comparison. So, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm not shitting on his accomplishment, but it is, you know, I think the leaders are going to be right around like 5,200 or something like that.
Currently, the current leader in the NFL is Burrow. He's at 42.
Oh, Jared, so not as high. So we've got two more games, though. So he's not going to get to 52.
Jared Goff is at almost 41. Mm-hmm. Geno is at 39. Baker's at 39. So Purdy is at like 13th right now. And he, like, CJ Stroud, Kirk Cousins, he'll pass Kirk Cousins. Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, that's in the company. So,
yeah. I'm not shitting on it. It's just okay.
The thing about it, I think, for him is that, and the other thing, which is actually more impressive, his yards per attempt is like third in the league, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's the number that's important.
Yeah. So, The season that he had, that I'm just like, you know, Brock didn't have a great season. Yeah, it's not great. It's not the season that he had the previous 2 years, but it's also, you know, not the gloom and doom for Brock Purdy here. He is in the mix with guys that are going to make money in this league. So, you know, just some context here.
I'm not on either poll that Brock Purdy is trash and Brock Purdy is elite. What I am comfortable in saying right now, after 3 years, that Brock's floor is above average. And when I say above average, if there are 32 teams, 16 is average. He is comfortably at 12, 13, 14, 15. I think it's closer to 12 or 13, maybe 11. So if that is his floor, you add that with his leadership and his resilience, that earns $225 million plus guaranteed. It just does. I don't see how, if Trevor Lawrence gets that, I don't see how you cannot pay Brock Purdy that. I just, that's what it buys. And because what are we really talking about? Are we really talking about trying to pay him like Tua? There's no way his team, his agent, accepts that contract. And you can't put yourself in a position where Brock Purdy is threatening to hold out. It's just, it would be a disaster for them to play with this man's money. And I get it. You guys say that you don't think that Brock Purdy would do that, but if Brock Purdy would, and it would be his agent that would be doing that. And he damn sure will, because if you look at it, that agency is like a year and a half years old, and this is their biggest contract yet. And I'll be damned if he's going to tank this contract negotiation, you know, to keep a little bit of money in Jed's pocket. Doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. He should get paid. Brock has earned the right to get paid. He's earned it. I don't do deserve. I don't do worth. He is what he has put on tape. He's the guy moving forward, because I don't know. What do you do if you move off Brock? What is your answer? Short answer is Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew.
Sammy Tommy DeVito. Bring him back. Bring back Sam Darnold, baby.
Yeah, Sam Darnold's going to make $60 million. He's not leaving Minnesota. You know, J.J. McCarthy is like 21 years old. They're going to pay Sam Darnold. They're going to keep him. They'll train the other kid. And he's earned $60 million. You know, he's earned a contract right there in line with what Baker signed. I mean, he has. You know, I still don't believe in Sam Darnold at all. But I think he's played well enough that I would keep it rolling. And I mean, hell, there's an outside chance they could make it to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So,
and you know, if they do make it to the Super Bowl, you know what some of these 49er fans are going to say? Shanahan picked the wrong guy.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, people call me, say I'm a Brock hater, but I am not a Brock hater. I hate the hyperbole surrounding Brock. I think he's a good quarterback, and I think he's a way better quarterback, knowing that he is not as physically talented as Sam Darnold. He's a way better quarterback than Sam Darnold, because every two or three, even as they are with only two losses, every two or three games, Darnold going to do Sam Darnold things. He's going to make plays and decisions and throws that will just have you scratching your head. Like, what is he thinking? And I guess Brock YOLOs too at a certain level. But I just think I've seen enough of him to think that that's where his growth and maturity is going to come. It's going to come in his further mastery of the offense. It's going to come in his further understanding of defenses, and specifically what defenses are trying to do with him. And he's going to learn when he can press. And like you said, in this yesterday's game. It's been a long week, y'all. It's my birthday, and sorry. but when he can press the advantage and when he just needs to be conservative, I think those are decisions that will come with maturity. So I think there is a lot of growth for Brock. And I think that if his floor right now is above average, who knows how good he can end up being. And I'm excited to watch the process, because I was out probably a little too early on Alex Smith. I don't know. The jury's still out on that. So I shitted on that dude for a long, long time. I was real, really, 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 really hard on Alex Smith. And I'm trying to be nicer with Brock and just not have an expectation of a 8-year or 9-year veteran on a 3rd-year player who was the last pick in the draft. He has been excellent, all things considered. And he's been very, very good without any caveats. So I'm excited to be able to witness his growth and development. And I hope they give him his bread, because that's just, you know, how I'm fixed. I want everybody to get paid.
All right, so we'll be back around this time, yep. Maybe a little earlier, next Monday, after the Niners and the Lions. I just want them to compete. You know, at this point, winning is probably great for the locker room.
Would cap the season. It would be, you know, which is crazy for a team that was in the Super Bowl last year. But this, you know, if we could give them another loss, it would make my season. I don't know if it would make their season, but I would be ecstatic. And this is somebody who has a ticket, you know, at 16-1 for the Lions to get to the Super Bowl. So I would absolutely be rooting against my financial interest with the 49ers next week. So go Niners.
Yeah. And if they play well and lose, they're continuing to keep pace with having a good draft pick. I think they're at 11.
That's
right now.
That's what, according to Tankathon, that's where they're at now.
So I don't know if they can move into the top 10 or if they,
didn't think they could get this close. Honestly, when I mean,
it was only like 3 weeks ago, they were at 14 or something.
Right.
So it dropped.
And then like 6 weeks ago, it was like 17. I mean, it was, I just didn't see with all those teams up there. Well, obviously, I guess I was assuming we was going to win some games. I didn't think we would lose all these games. I was late to the party that this is just not a very good football team.
Yeah,
I was still making deals. Like last week, I thought we was going to win last week. And we could have won that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But yeah.
All right, so we'll be back next Monday night with our second to last regular season show. We'll still have to figure it out. We have not had this show when the Niners did not make the playoffs, so we'll have to figure out a schedule. I do at least want to do a post-Super Bowl game show. I think still at least do that one. But yeah, we'll sort of figure out the rhythm of a non-playoff 49ers team coverage. So, all right. For Rod, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Hope you had a good time.
I had too good a time. too old for that shit.
And also, happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you.
Hope you have a good upcoming couple days and can relax and hang with the fam and others, your friends, as much as possible. So, for Rod, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late-night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.